from Illinois Soul. This is Dialogue. I'm Reginald Hardwick, Illinois Public Media News and Public Affairs Director. Dialogue is an exchange about culture straight from the soul. As 2026 begins, we're going to talk about a population that for some people is out of sight, out of mind. For the past year and a half, IPM education reporter Emily Hayes has spent a lot of time behind bars, probing educational opportunities and interactions, including at the state prison in Danville. Research shows education in prison works to rehabilitate incarcerated people, give them opportunities after prison, and decrease the chance they'll end up back behind bars. But quality education programs don't exist at every prison in Illinois. Those that do are often interrupted by lockdowns, where the incarcerated are confined to their cells all day. IPM's Emily Hayes has more on the rash of lockdowns in the state's prisons and the possible solutions.
Calvin Mayfield wants to be in class all day. He's incarcerated at Pinckneyville Correctional Center in Southern Illinois and has been taking a culinary arts course.
Everything's kind of new, and learning about how restaurants, you know, kind of behind the scenes are run it's interesting. I kind of didn't know it was that involved.
His classes start at 8:30 a.m. and run until 4 p.m. with a lunch break. But oftentimes he learns just 1 hour before that his classes are canceled for the day.
Culinary arts is 4 days a week, but there'll be weeks where we'll only go over there one or maybe two times because when we're on lockdown, they cancel school.
Since COVID-19, prisons across the United States have increasingly turned to lockdowns to handle staffing shortages. And in Illinois, the number of lockdowns has been rising. State prisons are now in lockdown almost twice as many days per year as they were during the pandemic.
During lockdowns, prisoners are in their cell just about 24 hours a day. They don't even get recreation.
Dr. Terry A. Coopers is a psychiatrist who studies the effects of prison conditions. He says he considers lockdowns a form of solitary confinement.
It's been determined by the United Nations that more than 15 days in solitary confinement constitutes a human rights abuse and torture.
Coopers has toured prisons across the country and performed psychiatric examinations of those in solitary. He says it's very common to see high rates of anxiety, panic disorder, sleeping problems, and hopelessness. And it affects their ability to learn.
I asked prisoners in solitary, if I was in solitary, I would read everything I can get a hold of. Why don't you read more? And they say, I can't remember what I read the page before. That's a very widespread concentration problem, and we have brain studies that show why that happens.
Most lockdowns in Illinois last year were related to staffing or administrative decisions, not incidents of self-harm or violence among the incarcerated.
I understand the staff shortages, but staff shortage is not an excuse for abusing prisoners.
The Illinois Department of Corrections says it acknowledges there's been an increase in total lockdowns and is taking steps to address the issue. A spokesperson for the department says those efforts include boosting recruitment, setting up more training academies, and new wellness initiatives like staff decompression rooms in every facility. Some prisons have a solution to keep classes going even during lockdowns. Jason Baer is the staff member in charge of peer education programs at Danville Correctional Center. He says these group mentoring classes led by those in prison at Danville help alleviate the stresses of lockdowns.
I'm out. I'm talking to somebody. It's a release of energy. I'm not sitting. I'm not mad. I've walked wings on lockdowns lots of times, and you feel when are we done? I mean, just as simple as 30 or 45 minutes, that's going to slow that down a little bit.
Susan Dewey is a professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Alabama. She thinks peer mentoring can be an antidote to the staff shortages that have long existed in prisons.
What can we do with the resources that we have? And peer mentoring is a big answer to that and has been for a very long time.
Peer mentoring doesn't have the same track record as university classes, which help those in prison turn their lives around more than other forms of education. But Dewey says higher ed courses have a limited reach.
It's a teeny tiny minority of people in prison who have access to those, honestly, too, and who want to participate, right, for a whole lot of reasons. So peer mentoring is something everyone can do.
But Calvin Mayfield would really like to take a university course. There just aren't any available at Pinckneyville. That's why he's trying to transfer to another prison that does have access. Mayfield's sentence lasts until 2036 for sexual assault and other charges.
When I get out, I'm going to be 60. And I'm going to have to work, you know, for the rest of my life, you know, to support myself. So I think education would really help me open more doors for me when I get out, you know. Maybe people would see that I was really trying to better myself in prison.
While waiting for his transfer, he would like to take the class he has access to instead of facing lockdowns from staff shortages.
They've been saying that for so many years that you would think after so long they would, you know, change the way they do things. If they can't hire enough people, if nobody wants to work here, it seems like they would have to change the way they operate, you know. It's not fair to just to say, oh, well, nobody came to work today, so we're just not going to let you out.
The Illinois Department of Corrections says one obstacle to continuing peer education during lockdowns is that peer-led programs usually need a large gathering space outside of housing units. But the department is encouraging each prison to adjust its lockdown procedures to keep as many daily activities going as possible. I'm Emily Hayes.
Mentorship is a critical part of life for people in prison, and it helps the incarcerated provide support to one another. Danville Correctional Center has led Illinois in encouraging those kinds of relationships with formal group classes. The curricula range from conflict resolution to parenting to budgeting for life after prison. Here are the voices of three men speaking on mentorship from behind bars.
I'm Larry McCaskill. I've been a part of the program since 2018.
Being in these groups where you hear yourself say these things that you don't say out loud, right? These harsh realities, these black and white absolutes that you think make sense, right? And then you hear other people's truths. And more than anything, I started to understand how unhappy I was because my life was, it felt like I had no agency, no power. Like everything was already preordained. If you do this, I have to say this. I have to do this, right? And I had no choice. And so for me, the beginning experiences were liberating because it was like, wait. I have cornered myself off in life where there are entire regions of my personality I have never tapped into. Anyone who knows me, like, I am like comic book reading, anime watching, Marvel obsessed nerd. And I thought I was this hardcore, like, hardcore, fully committed to like this one life. And so when you come to a place like Danville and there's so much movement and you come to the building block and there's so many personalities and there's so many different things to experience, right? So many different perspectives. You start meeting the people who love comic books just as much as you're going to love comic books. The people who play Magic the Gathering and you're like, wait, I actually like this game, right? There's a softness that starts to settle in.
Robert Mueller, everybody calls me Bob. I'm part of the New Life program, which everybody keeps referring to as the reentry program. So we deal with the guys that are just about ready to go home. We also have a life, it's called a Life 2.0 simulation. It's a game, but it's really a financial responsibility simulation. So guys get a job on the wing. They might be the shoe store, they might be the gas station, they might be the grocery store, they might be the car salesman. And they actually sell cards that are the actual products. So shoes, you get a picture of shoes with a price on it. So for that job, you get paid a wage. You start out with a $15 an hour wage, and then that allows you then to pay your bills. So you have to have a place to live, you have to have a good car, you got to get your driver's license. We had one of our coaches went home, and he did contact one of our guys that was still here, one of his friends that was another coach. He said, I didn't really appreciate at the time how much the simulation was helping me. And when I went home and now I have to pay my bills every month, if I didn't have that, he had been gone for 25, 26 years, something like that. And he would not have had the discipline. He goes, I would have forgotten about payment. As an educator, the biggest thing that you have to do is find out whether what you're doing is working. And we don't know right now. I mean, we think we're doing a good job. Guys like our program, seem to like our program, and when they leave, they're appreciative of the work that's been put in. But we don't have any concrete evidence the way we would like to.
Myself, I'm a coach on the reentry wing. I'm Antonio Jones. I have a group, parenting group, where I'll be going through parenting strategies and techniques and self-improvement and self-awareness techniques with a cognitive behavioral therapy approach as well as a trauma-informed approach. I had hidden resentment toward my father that I didn't realize prior to me actually engaging in his fatherhood course. Like, my father was very abusive and he was addicted to drugs from my infancy on up until my incarceration. And he actually passed away since I've been gone, so that makes it more a much more deeper conflict for me. There were several times when myself, I reached out for help to my educational providers and guidance counselors. I suffered abuse as a child and neglect, and I told literally to them, and my voice wasn't heard. And I believe if children reach out to you for help, you should reach back. And had they done that, it would have probably been a different trajectory for my life. I have a son that I don't know. I've never really met him since he was an infant, so that's something that's very difficult for me to grapple with and to come to terms with and to prepare myself to be able to re-enter society and hopefully reconnect with him. Because something that I advocate to every guy in my group specifically is that just because you're incarcerated, your role as a father doesn't stop.
That was Larry McCaskill, Robert Mueller, and Antonio Jones. They've been in prison for around 2 decades for murder or sexual assault. Magic: The Gathering is a niche card game where players battle each other with spells, wizards, and fantasy creatures. The game was banned at a prison in Danville for years over concerns that the valuable cards could pose a safety risk. But Magic is back now at the prison, and among those incarcerated there, the game has developed a loyal following. Once again, here's Emily Hayes.
So this is a commander deck, right? A commander deck is a 100 card
Antonio deck. Jones keeps a deck of Magic the Gathering cards in the pocket of his prison uniform. He fans the deck out to show cards with drawings of elven queens, artifacts, and fantastical creatures. As he explains how the cards work, the corrections officer in the room begins to chuckle.
And this, yes, I am. I'm doing this, sir. I'm doing this. It's an awesome game. I recently got into it. I am not ashamed of my nerddom or the fact that I love this game.
Jones is one of a dozen incarcerated men sitting in a classroom in Danville Correctional Center. They are serving out long sentences for charges like sexual assault, murder, or being an accomplice to murder. They have all worked hard to become better versions of themselves, leading peer mentoring classes and working towards bachelor's and master's degrees as much as possible. And all but two play Magic the Gathering. Robert Schultz is another mentor. He teaches about conflict resolution as others in the prison get close to re-entering society. He says Magic is new to him.
There's not that many people who play it, right? Obviously, like, prison culture comes from urban areas, stuff like that, and you don't really find that many people who are playing Magic cards.
Schultz says the game is complex, and they are all really into the rules. They have a lot of time to learn them.
The rules, it depends on who you're playing with, right? It depends. They're very particular. It's like if you ever seen a pickup basketball game in grade school, and everybody thinks they're going to the NBA, so they're calling every single travel, every single like double dribble.
But the game has only recently been allowed at the prison. In 2001, Danville Correctional Center banned family and friends from sending Magic the Gathering cards. The Illinois Department of Corrections says the prison identified them as a security risk because of their value for trading. But in 2021, the prison began hosting Magic the Gathering tournaments using old cards that had been grandfathered in. Those in custody began to ask about buying new cards. Last year, the prison decided that staff could approve card purchases directly from a retailer. Department of Corrections spokesperson Naomi Pizzello said by email that the cards haven't caused any negative incidents. She says those in prison aren't allowed to have protective sleeves for the cards, so they get worn down and aren't as valuable as trading items. She says the game has become a constructive mental outlet for those in custody at Danville. She says it also helps reduce stress and supports emotional regulation. Psychiatrist Terry A. Coopers agrees. He's a professor at the Wright Institute in Berkeley, California. He says prisons take things away from the incarcerated too often.
Having possessions is a very important part of feeling like a human being. We're proud of the clothes we wear. We read books. We communicate with loved ones outside of correctional facilities.
The closer to normal life prisons can keep conditions, the more ready the incarcerated are to go straight afterwards. He says prisons should try to provide access to everyday items as much as possible.
It's the having access, having some freedom.
Cooper says it sounds like the men in Danville have found a creative recreational outlet that they want to do, and that's really healthy. At Danville Correctional Center, Magic the Gathering is also honing mentorship skills. Robert Schultz teaches about conflict resolution in the peer education classes and also while playing the game.
So there was a young kid and he showed up and he was watching, you know what I mean? Like kind of hovering around the table as we're all playing and he's just watching and watching and we're like, hey, do you want to play?
Then as the game heated up, Schultz says that player started to become rude.
Then we had a conversation with him and I was like, hey, look, like if you're going to be hanging out with us, this is the kind of behavior that we expect.
Schultz saw the younger player learn from the conversation and start thinking about how to set boundaries in other interactions. One day, the player complained that his peers were making fun of him for playing Magic.
I explained to him, I'm like, hey, you're sitting down here with someone, two people who are bachelor's degrees. I'm a master's degree student, right? All peer educators, all life coaches, like, what are they doing with their lives, right? Of course they're going to make fun of you.
Schultz said even having that conversation showed that the younger player felt comfortable being vulnerable with him, and that was its own win.
And if he could do it with us, imagine what he's going to do when he gets home with his family and people he, like, trusts on a more deeper level.
For Antonio Jones, Magic is a source of joy in a tough environment. He is always aware that he cannot have a bad day in prison as a mentor and as he works to show how he has grown since his conviction.
I can be overwhelmed and I can have moments of humanity where I may do something regrettable. And so I try to maintain a level of awareness to myself to be able to manage the stressors that I face on a daily basis.
So he manages the stress with music, journaling, and Magic the Gathering. I'm Emily Hayes with IPM News.
In 2022, activist Angela Davis was featured in a prison abolition report by CBS News.
Well, I've really tried to learn from history. So if someone made the argument that abolition is too strong a term, I would remind people that during the era of slavery, there were those who made the very same argument.
The United States has 4% of the world's population, but 20% of the world's prisoners. 38% of the U.S. prison population is Black.
What does a world post-prison look like?
My question would be, what would a world have to look like in order not to require the persistent interventions of police and imprisonment? We need better education. We would need a better healthcare system. We would need a better world. So abolition urges us to expand and make more capacious our very vision.
But for now, we remain far from prison abolition in America. Four times a year, Illinois Public Media airs a special statewide radio show called Prison Cast that serves people in Illinois prisons and jails. The show receives hundreds of messages from incarcerated people, many saying they're working to better themselves while they do time. But there are barriers to that, some of which are only skin deep. PrisonCast producer Lauren Frost of Chicago NPR station WBEZ takes us to Canton, Illinois, for a report on how tattoo removal programs could help people in custody to start fresh.
Like lots of stories I report on, this one starts with a letter I got from inside prison.
Dear PrisonCast, The reason for me writing and reaching out was I was trying to get a bill started in my name that will benefit every incarcerated man and woman that's faced with the same problem I'm dealing with.
This is Adonis Veal. He's incarcerated at Illinois River Correctional Center, a prison in central Illinois. And that problem he's dealing with, his face is covered in tattoos.
I think my teardrops was my first tattoo.
Some gang-related stuff.
Then I got the 6.G.
One is a hate symbol, though he says that's not why he got it. Adonis says ever since he began serving his sentence, he's wanted to take them all off.
I want to change my circle, my crowd, and I just wanted to change my appearance because it's like I don't want to be 60, 70 years old with tattoos in my face.
But here's the issue. He has no way to remove them or cover them while he's in the custody of the Illinois Department of Corrections.
I think that if guys could take advantage of that opportunity, they would.
That's where his idea comes in, for a state law to establish a tattoo removal program for incarcerated people. We wanted to investigate whether that's been done before and what it might look like. And it turns out, it's not such a wild idea. Last spring, I paid a visit to Redemption Studio. It's a state-licensed tattoo parlor, and it's inside the DuPage County Jail in Wheaton, Illinois.
This is a fully functional tattoo studio. We got everything we need here.
This is Nick Perry, an artist with Empire Tattoos. When I visit, he's working with a client named Matthew, who's been getting some gang tattoos removed and covered.
At first, it's kind of difficult because you've had them for a long time. They become a part of you.
But Matthew says his mind changed as he got older. He's got 3 grandkids now.
And if you take a realistic look at your life, the decision doesn't only affect me. It affects my family. I've been out in public with my mother and ran into some trouble because of my tattoos. So as I got older, it's a lot easier to make the decision.
The artists and technicians who visit Redemption Studio don't just hide gang tattoos or hate symbols. They'll cover branding marks from human trafficking, scars from bullet wounds or self-harm, anything that might make it hard for someone to move forward. Another client, Nicholas, says his old ink represents his old identity. He thinks he got his first tattoos when he was 13 or 14 years old.
I knew that if I was going to transition into this new life that I had pictured for myself, I knew that things have to be removed. And you have to kill that old identity that you had, you know, shaped for yourself.
This is just one program at one county-run jail. The Illinois Department of Public Health says it's not aware of any other body art studios in the state that are inside prisons or jails. But traveling studios are another option. California's Department of Corrections launched a statewide tattoo removal program in 2023. Associate Warden Melanie Bruns says they work with a contractor who drives mobile studios to all the different state prisons there.
I would highly encourage other Department of Corrections to consider this. The feedback that we've gotten from our population has been nothing but positive. I mean, we have wait lists at almost all of our institutions.
The Illinois Department of Corrections denied our request for an interview about whether it's considered a tattoo removal program here, and did not respond to written questions by our deadline. Back at Illinois River Prison, Adonis hopes legislators will consider his pitch for what he's calling the Adonis L. Veal Tattoo Removal Act. In the meantime, he's finding other ways to reinvent himself, despite the dehumanizing conditions of a state prison.
I'm like 60% better than what I was coming in. I think the other 40% would be when I hit the gate and practice everything that I learned behind these prison walls.
Adonis says he's educating himself, working, reading, and trying to make the most of his time. I'm Lauren Frost.
You're listening to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. I'm Reginald Hardwick. We're talking about the incarcerated in Illinois, and we want to hear from you. If you have thoughts about those behind bars, drop us a voicemail at 217-244-1989. Again, 217-244-1989. Violent crime is a big problem in Chicago, but it is sharply down this year, as it is with many U.S. cities. That decline did not stop President Trump from describing Chicago as, quote, a hellhole, and deploying the National Guard last year. Violence prevention groups already play a role in driving down crime in the city. Anna Sabjinko has the story of how one violence interrupter turned her life around.
When LaToya Baines was incarcerated over a decade ago, everyone in prison thought she was crazy. She just stayed in her cell and didn't talk to anyone.
I'm an emotional person. So when I went to prison, you couldn't really have emotions. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have other people dictating your life. You're on a schedule. So it made me shut down.
She didn't know what to do until she met Crystal Handy. She was also serving time. Baines calls her TT.
And my TT was like, she's not crazy. She just needs somebody to listen.
One day, Crystal pulled her out of her cell and just talked to her. And Baines opened up.
Everybody was so shocked, but she had this comfort. She had this peace that I didn't have, that I needed.
The peace she needed to make it through her 9.5-year sentence. Baines found it hard to rebuild her relationships when she got out, like with her son and daughter, who'd gotten used to their mom's phone calls from prison.
So in the midst of trying to rebuild yourself, you also have to try to rebuild those relationships with your kids, too. That's difficult because sometimes you're going to get rejected. Yeah, your mom, but where you been?
Her children are teens now. Baines has a picture of the three of them together printed on her mouse pad at work.
This is like one of the most recent picture of us together.
Baines' office is on the west side of Chicago, where she works for the Alliance of Local Service Organizations. It's one of several groups in Chicago that hire people with criminal records to help drive down violent crime. Overall, violent crime is near the lowest it's been in more than 40 years. These groups create pathways for people like Baines, whose records make it harder for them to get a job anywhere else.
I knew I had a dream to help people, but I never knew that this was where it would lead me.
Krista Hamilton leads the Chicago Social Services Agency, UCAN, and she says the lived experience of violence interrupters aids them in their work.
When you've experienced harm, when you've experienced loss of a loved one, you can't train someone to have that level of commitment. So they show up in a way that I think we absolutely need them to be in this work.
Now, Baines relies on her own experience to help others who are at their lowest point as they adjust to life after incarceration or learn how to rebuild their own relationships with their kids. She connects them to services like trauma treatments, education, job training. The idea is that by helping people who live in crime hotspots, they can reduce desperation and therefore reduce crime and violence. On a recent afternoon, Baines' team was giving out free food at a local school. That's where she ran into Orlando Vasquez. She's been helping him find housing.
So I found you a connection for your housing. So I'm going to get, I need you to come in the office tomorrow, okay. Probably about 11.
Okay. Thank you. That's love. I will be there.
Vasquez is in a program that's teaching him how to become a professional violence interrupter. Baines says he's an example of how her team helps people on the fringes to break the cycle of violence. That's why she says that Chicago doesn't need federal intervention. What she and others are doing, she says, is working. For NPR News, I'm Anna Savchenko in Chicago.
Illinois prisons currently hold nearly 29,000 people. What happens when they've served their time and re-enter life outside the prison walls?
We're not just talking about people that have been impacted by the criminal justice system want to get involved in this work. We're talking about people in a business community that can help us make the change too.
A new Central Illinois organization is trying to help returning citizens. We'll talk with them when Dialogue from Illinois Soul returns.
Thank you.
Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Reginald Hardwick, the News and Public Affairs Director from Illinois Public Media. Dialogue is an exchange about culture straight from the soul. Nearly 29,000 people are currently incarcerated in Illinois' prison system. That's down from a peak of nearly 50,000 a decade ago. But being imprisoned, or even just getting arrested, can follow someone for decades after the experience is over. That can cause problems when formerly incarcerated people look for jobs or even housing. Advocates for formerly incarcerated people across the state are still working to lessen the stigma these individuals can face. In 2025, members of Fully Free Blow No, an organization dedicated to helping returning citizens, spoke with my colleague Christine Herman on the 21st show. Here's part of that conversation.
Toy Beasley has been working on Fully Free Blow No and other regional groups as regional coordinator for the Illinois Coalition to End Permanent Punishments. Also with us are Fully Free Blow No members Shayla Woodworth and Candace Bird. Shayla, Candace, welcome to you as well. Toy, let's start with you. Talk about how a conviction or even an arrest that doesn't lead to a charge or conviction can stick with someone long after the incident has occurred.
So when a person commits a crime, they get arrested, whether they get out on probation or parole, it sticks with them the rest of their life. And so a lot of people that's involved in the system, they're told that their record will be clean after 7 years. That's not necessarily true. Their record will stay with them the rest of their life. And so that's why we pushing policy change like Clean Slate to help advocate to make life easier for a person long after their sentence.
And Shayla, I wonder if you can help us dive into some specifics about how the experience of being arrested or in prison can affect a person's life and also the lives of people around them.
I'm actually somebody who has had a parent who was incarcerated I was about 17 when that happened. And there was just a lot of judgment and blaming. So as a kid, I didn't commit that crime, but I still lived with the punishment. There was a lot of shame, especially with media, and the way that it overtook our lives. So that's something that has followed me since then. And then I had my own bouts of incarceration and being justice impacted because, I also have substance use and mental health challenges. And all of those barriers have, I've lost jobs. Housing has been harder to obtain. And then also just when you have a label that's put on you by society, it sticks with you. And when it's said so many different times, you start to believe it, unfortunately. So it's a lot of learning that you're not your worst moments.
And Toy, I'd love to hear more about your experience as well and what leads you into the work that you do with not just Fully Free Blow No, but the Illinois Coalition to End Permanent Punishments.
So, Shayla and Candace spoke earlier, I'm too a person that has been impacted by the criminal justice system. And prior to working with the Illinois Coalition to End Permanent Punishment, I worked in direct service after incarceration for 20 years. And so I got involved in this work because I knew that with me being impacted by the criminal justice system and my experience, I can help change the narrative and help push for policy change. And so, I left direct service after I got incarcerated, did work for direct service 20 years because I knew that I can be an advocate for that. And so this work means a lot to me. And so that's one of the reasons why we started the Fully Free Blow No, is because we not only did we want to push policy change, but we want to educate the community. And I truly believe the more we educate the community, the more community get involved and help us push some initiatives. And so And we're not just talking about people. We're not just talking about people that been impacted by the criminal justice system want to get involved in this work. We're talking about people in the business community that can help us make the change too.
Brandy in Urbana wrote to us to say, my mom has a criminal record from 20 plus years ago when she was suffering from drug addiction, and that record still haunts her to this day. She's not able to get a job in fields that would be meaningful to her, like healthcare, because of her record. And especially as she's gotten older and has suffered physical disabilities, her prospects for work are slim. And Brandy goes on to say, her mom's past crimes don't define her, but they do limit her still more than 20 years later. Toy, how common are experiences like that, which Brandy shared with us?
Oh, it happens all the time. And so that's why we want to help push policy change. And the Clean Slate Bill that's currently in the Senate will currently help solve a lot of those issues that his mother is going through. So if she follows under that criteria, her record will be automatically sealed from her past if this bill passed. So it happens all the time. You know, I get calls all the time about it. When I'm out in the community, people are talking about, you know, old records that's affecting them. So it's a big issue. And so that's why we need to continue to push our voice and let our voice need to be heard, like the gentleman on this call was speaking on behalf of his mother.
We're talking right now about life after incarceration, the challenges that people face, what people are up against, how some of them are dealing with those issues. And we're talking about this with three members of the new group, Fully Free Blono, which serves formerly incarcerated people in that part of the state. With us are organizer Toy Beasley, as well as members Shayla Woodworth and Candace Bird. Candace, can you tell us a little bit about the group? What are you all about?
Yeah, so the most important piece is to start up is stemming from a grassroots movement. Our priority is to let individuals in our community understand their power, their ability to make systemic change, and create a powerful network that pushes for record sealing reform. But it is specifically geared around leadership development, because not only does this stem from justice impaction, but we want them to know that if there's any changes that we need to make just here in Blono, across Illinois, and in other counties, they should feel empowered. All members and associates should feel empowered to do so. So a lot of our trainings and conversations start with that power building.
And Shayla, can you elaborate on what Candace and both and also Toy have nodded to, which is sort of this idea about the importance of making connections within the community beyond people who are formerly incarcerated, but with the broader community. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So that is, you know, something that we aim to do. I think a lot of times people, when, you know, we have this idea, we get around like-minded people and we're like, yes, you know, this is great. That's a great idea. But we really want to hear from all perspectives, and we really want to network and hear other people's stories, you know, hear where they've come from, because, you know, we all have a unique lived experience that is extremely powerful, and it, you know, invokes hope in other people. And we also, you know, we as an organization with like the Fully Free Blono, you know, like it is stemming out to our legislators, it's stemming out to the police officers, it's stemming out to the correctional officers, you know, it's stemming out to like everyday business people, even if you haven't been justice impacted, right? Maybe you know somebody, because it's very likely that you do. They maybe just haven't shared it with you yet. But that's how we build power, by like networking and, you know, just coming together. I think so many times we're, you know, pushing people that have either like an ideal that doesn't go with us or whatever, we push them away. But as a society, I think if we just come together, we really can figure out a way to end this permanent punishment and fight for a future where there are not lifelong consequences, and, you know, like removing those barriers and
you know, we can grow and change as a society, so.
You're listening to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. I'm Reginald Hardwick. We're talking about the incarcerated in Illinois, and we want to hear from you. If you have thoughts about those behind bars or maybe those who have returned to citizenship, drop us a voicemail at 217-244-1989. Again, call 217-244-1989 and leave a voicemail. Let's return you now to an excerpt from the 21st show, with Fully Free Blono, an organization dedicated to helping returning citizens after they've completed their sentences. Here's my colleague, Christine Herman.
So we've mentioned barriers to housing, barriers to jobs, barriers to education even. And Toy, you talked about creating partnerships with business owners. Is the idea sort of that creating education around this issue can lead to more employment opportunities for people who have been formerly justice involved?
Absolutely. So one of our goals with the Fully Free Blono is to reach out to employees, but especially our local chamber of commerce. And so having those positive conversations, let people know that, you know, people that came home from prison, they're not bad people. They're just people that had a past, you know, dealt with trauma in the past and trying to move on. So I think a lot of our businesses, employers, don't understand the magnitude behind what people go through before incarceration. So if some of our employers, and I'm not just talking about your warehouse jobs, your restaurant jobs, I'm talking about the banking industry, the insurance industry, the technology industry, to let them know that, hey, our people are qualified to work in this industry. They just got caught up and need a second chance.
It sounds like there's a lot of addressing the stigma associated with incarceration that you all are trying to do. And I wonder if part of that involves just people getting to know other people who have that experience, hearing their stories, and like you kind of nodded to, Toy, hearing their full story, not just the thing about the thing that led them into prison, but understanding their full background, maybe their past trauma, and maybe creating some empathy around that, lessening the stigma. Is that kind of at least part of the idea of what you all are going for?
Absolutely. You know, it shouldn't be the punishment after the punishment. You know, you get punished when you go to prison. Then when you come home, you get punished because you can't find gainful employment or housing. So, you know, like I said, we're trying to change that stigma, not being punished after the punishment.
Candace, what difference would it make to have records sealed for a person who is eligible, who is formerly incarcerated?
It makes all the difference in the world, because from experience, I know that there's so many individuals that, one, don't know the process, know if they're eligible for the process, don't have access to the resources, if any, in their county to support them during the process prior to this bill. And so that leads to almost, you know, thousands of people who don't get their records sealed. And then that decreases our economy and the workforce and so many other things that filter out into how it affects our community. So with this happening automatically, it just means that those doors open up without you having to search or sign up and pay for resources and assistance. It makes a very big difference. And there's so many things outside of housing and employment that you don't have access to that are less commonly known, like babysitting. If you try to use a public babysitting site, of course, they're checking your record. But as the person who needs the service, you can also get denied due to a record. So a lot of things can change that are beneficial to individuals like us and others.
We're talking right now with three members of a new group in Bloomington Normal advocating for formerly incarcerated people, connecting them with resources and with each other, and aiming to help lessen the stigma that people with old arrest or conviction records can face. And that includes advocating for legislation, as we've been discussing, that would seal or expunge nonviolent criminal records. We got a text. This one comes from Terry in Batavia, who says, I have mixed feelings. After a person has served their time, they should be able to move, work, and live freely. However, as a former recruiting manager, I wouldn't hire a person with a prior embezzlement conviction into an accounting position, so I have to say I agree with the idea in part. Toy, what else can you think of, do you think can or should change at the legal level to help people reenter society after incarceration, perhaps, you know, beyond this expungement issue? Or do you feel like this is the big thing that needs to happen and it would really solve a lot of problems?
So, like I was saying, through the years, there was only 4 felonies that were eligible to get sealed, and it went to 9. Now it went to just 4 that's not eligible. So this clean slate will be the best opportunity for people to get an opportunity. And I think Shayla talked about it earlier, you know, and Candace talked about people not having the resources. So people that live in rural areas, you know, that want to get their record sealed, they don't have those resources in that area. And then they don't have to, you know, go through all that traveling, that live in a rural area, which it costs for that. So the clean slate bill is the only option. It has passed in other states, and other states have had good reports from it passing and people able to get gainful employment. And then, like Candace said earlier, you know, it'll bring revenue to our community to help people. And then, too, also, this will help reduce recidivism if this bill is passed.
I want to take a couple minutes that we have left to talk about something all of you have brought up in different ways throughout our conversation. That's about the stigma. And Candace, I wonder if you can talk about, you know, the societal stigma around these convictions. And even if a person is able to get their records sealed, there's still also internet media coverage. I know one of you mentioned that. How does that all play into this and create barriers for people who are trying to reenter society? Candace, maybe you can go first, and then Shayla will have you share your thoughts as well.
I think we just have to look at it in a holistic manner. As a whole, now that we have access to the internet and social media, we are so ready to kind of demonize people in certain situations when we only hear a part of the story, whether it be on the news, on a quick TikTok, or word of mouth from somebody else posting something. We never really get down to the why, the what, or the reasons behind these situations. So to kind of lead to your question, it's something that we have to work on together, that we have to really think critically about. What if we find out, if something is sealed, but you already know that this individual had a record prior to that, or it was accessible, it was in the news, because obviously we can't take that back if it's a wide covered story. We have to understand the trauma behind it, the mental health behind it. And that's not to make excuses, but it's to say that people can change. And if we adjust our legal system and our judicial system to be proactive instead of reactive, and really offering real chances at repairing those traumas and issues, then we can, again, like we said, reduce the recidivism rate and really support people where they're at with their needs.
And Shayla, is there anything you'd like to add to what Candace just shared?
One of the things, it goes along with like the stigma. And so it was actually like in reference to the texts that had come in. And like, I definitely understand whenever I like had heard like, you know, the embezzlement for banking, right? Wouldn't hire that. Like, I understand when you look at it at face value that wouldn't make sense, right? But I really think that people aren't seeing who they are and not just where they've been. And also like having an understanding that the way that the justice system works when they charge somebody, like personally, I have something, it's called like aggravated identity theft. And in transparency, I took $100 off of my grandmother's account for which I was an authorized user when I was in active addiction, right? Like when you have those two extremes, but that's what I pled guilty to because of just everything that was going on. You know, I think if we looked at it as like a case by case and then just kind of seeing like giving an opportunity to be like, hey, so what happened here? You know what I mean? Like what's going on, you know, like, and what have you done since then to become a better person?
I'd like to thank my guests from Fully Free Blono for joining us today, for sharing your experiences, your stories with us. We really appreciate it. We've been talking with organizer Toy Beasley and members Shayla Woodworth and Candace Bird.
That's all for this week's Dialogue. Our reporting was by Emily Hayes, Lauren Frost, Anna Savchenko, and Christine Herman. Our theme was composed by Lamont Holden. What would you like to hear us discuss in 2026? Help shape our coverage by calling 217-244-1989. Again, 217-244-1989. Don't forget to leave your name, number, or email so we can follow up. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are part of Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We'll talk with you again next week.